Blog Talk Radio.
Preferred Obama 66% to 32%.
Protecting Medicare and Social Security from benefit cuts is more important than bringing down the deficit that was 73% to 18%. Overall, voters in the survey said making the wealthy start paying for their fair share of taxes is more important than reducing taxes across the board, 62% to 33%. 88% support allowing Medicare to negotiate with drug companies to lower costs. 70% favor continue extended federal unemployment insurance. 64% support supporting federal government funding to local governments. 68% oppose raising the Medicare eligibility age. 69% oppose reductions in Medicaid benefits. 84% oppose reducing Social Security benefits. 64% support addressing the deficit by increasing taxes on the rich. 72% say that corporations and wealthy individuals have too much influence on the political system. The result also showed that more than half of those surveyed also favor ending the Bush tax cuts for those making more than $250,000. A notable increase considering historical trends on tax-related issues. Through the labor election program, 400,000 volunteers made more than 80 million phone calls to working-class households, knocked on more than 14 million doors, had conversations with more than 3 million workers in the workplace, and sent out more than 75 million pieces of mail. The program also was significant in expanding the electorate. Since August of 2011, more than 450,000 new union members were registered to vote. Through the Labor Super PAC Workers' Voice, union volunteers were able to compete with unprecedented amounts of corporate cash by reaching beyond union voters to talk one-on-one with the public about candidate stands on issues of critical importance to working families. Unions were also key in making sure that voters were able to exercise their right to vote and making sure that the vote was counted through the My Vote, My Right Voter Protection Program. Unions worked closely with community partners to provide voting information for months, culminating in an Election Day rapid response operation with more than 2,000 poll monitors helping ensure voters' rights. Through Workers' Voice, unions ran a cutting-edge targeting and outline and online mobilization program, launching new digital tools to enable grassroots activists to contact their friends and neighbors and turn traditionally top-down political action into a bottom-up mobilization. Trumpka said that the election was just the beginning and that there are clear steps about what has to be done next. Unlike the past election cycles, the infrastructure built around the 2012 election is not being shut down until the next election. The labor movement is building a long-term, year-round mobilization structure. The AFL-CIO is immediately shifting focus to the lame duck session of Congress. On Thursday, working family activists will be out in the communities at nearly 100 events to deliver a message to members of Congress about the fiscal shutdown. No more tax breaks for the richest 2%, and no benefit cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. It's time to rebuild America's middle class, not tear it down. It's time for everyone in America to pay their fair share, and that starts at the top. It's time for a renewed investment in manufacturing, education, and basic infrastructure to create good jobs here at home. It's time to fix our broken immigration system and create common sense, humane solutions that respect families and communities. It's time for all working people to be able to exercise our rights with confidence. Even after such a polarizing campaign, our nation can and we'll come together to move our country forward. We're ready to be a part of it. Our other labor leaders are echoing Trumpka's words. The American people send a clear message that we will stand with the president who stands with all Americans. From the White House to the state houses, we pull together to elect leaders who who believe that we are all in this together, said Lee Saunders, president of AFSCME and chair of the AFL-CIO Political Committee. So I'm glad that they're going to build on the structure that they've already put in place and not just dismantle everything and say, okay, that's over, we can rest for 4 years, because you can't rest, because there's an agenda to be passed through Congress, and until we do that, we can't, you really can't rest.
I think it's important that we can get time to read that little one.
Oh, the little one.
This one.
Okay, here it is. This is, with events across the country, working families turn from election to protecting the social safety net. Well, working families are resting, this is by Kenneth Quinnell, and this is from the, again, from the AFL-CIO Now, it's a blog. While working families are resting after an exhausting election cycle, working people and union members are continuing to mobilize. Before the end of the year, Congress will meet in a lame duck session and tackle numerous issues that could have powerful effects on the lives of middle-class Americans. Some politicians and Wall Street executives want a grand bargain that could cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits, all to give tax cuts to the wealthiest people. Working families won't stand for these proposals and have organized events all across the country to let politicians know that tax cuts for the wealthy and cuts to the social safety net are not acceptable. Today, Arizona seniors, students, and workers will gather at Representative Ron Barber, Democrat from Arizona office in Tucson, to thank him for his commitment to defend Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid when he returns to Washington, D.C. for the lame duck session. Pima County residents shared personal stories about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid and stressed the importance of protecting them from benefit cuts. The Wednesday event at Barber's office is one of many similar events that working families will hold across the country Thursday to address the budget showdown Congress will face during the lame duck session for a National Day of Action. Okay, it says, if you go onto the AFL-CIO Now blog and you go onto this article, you can click on it, and you can find where there's an event in your area if you would like to participate in that. So that's a good thing.
Problem here.
What's your problem?
Well, the network is not responding too well. Very, very slow tonight. As the Blog Talk Network, I'm trying to get to the... back to the studio, it just booked out on it.
Oh, we'll keep going, try to get back to
and
that.
I may wonder, why don't you go and yours to that? This may take a while.
Oh, okay.
We have to dial on and learn.
Okay. I will. So, while Leo is.
Until I can get this thing to work properly.
We'll have to go to this Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. There's always a gap with this network, and I apologize, but
it just takes me a minute, folks.
There's problems with the network constantly.
You want to go to sign in?
No. Unbelievable slowness.
So Leo's going to sign into the Blog Talk Radio on the laptop.
It's just like if it's not really.
Sometimes that happens. I don't know why that.
This happens during the shows. Really, really annoying.
So sorry, folks. It just takes us a minute. But I hope you all went out there and voted yesterday. And I noticed at my polling place that it was more crowded than I've ever seen it. Usually, I live in a small town. There are only about 3,800 full-time residents here. And I had to park in back of the library, which is unusual. Usually, I can park right up close to the town hall, which is our polling place. But there were tons of people, and I spoke to a few other people I know from work who live in my town, and they said, boy, it was crowded when I went, and they went at a different time that I did, so it was pretty crowded all day long. So I think all of the voters who were supposed to vote registered, got out there and voted. I think people felt it was an important election.
Yeah.
And so that's good. Larry, on coming on the phone now.
Hello.
Hi, Larry. It's Lila.
Hey.
And Joe is right here.
Hi, Larry.
How are you?
Oh, we're very well. I bet you're one very happy guy.
Yeah. Quite a day yesterday. Quite a day.
Wasn't it so, huh? There was a big change between the time that we spoke to you a month ago and Election Day.
Right, right. There certainly was. Yesterday turned out to be quite a day in terms of repelling a lot of the people who have been trying to buy their way into power. So we'll have to see what happens now after. But at least kept people like McMahon out, and that's a good thing.
And it wasn't really that close.
Tell me something. What do you think about this? I think what bothered me about this entire election was the congressional results. Not in this state so much, but the entire country voted Obama in. Not the entire country, but the majority.
It was a close election.
And yet they still kept the Republican Congress. Does that make sense?
That's absolutely right, and I'm with you on that. I was extremely disappointed
I just didn't understand. And you know the thing that amazed me too? I guess Ryan still won his district in Wisconsin.
Right.
I was disappointed in that.
That floored me. I mean, you know, I couldn't believe it. We read an article a couple of Wednesdays ago regarding Ryan's district, and they were the most hard hit industrial district in Wisconsin, all right?
Economically.
And he's slashed all kinds of programs in that area, all right? And yet these clowns are still voting him in?
I didn't understand that at all.
Did that make sense?
Oh,
my God.
I know we discussed this the last show. It's remarkable how, sadly, people will vote against their own best interests in these elections. And yeah, I just saw public television has that documentary series, Point of View.
Yeah.
And they did a piece on Janesville, Wisconsin, which is where he's from, part of his district. And, you know, it showed Scott Walker in the fight that the unions had with him and Paul Ryan. And like you said, this area has been devastated by factory closings and offshoring of jobs. And, you know, that's unfortunate that he's back, and he's going to be – certainly he'll be a troublemaker. So, I share your concern. I wish we had seen
more. Yeah, it's absolutely frightening.
They'll do what they've been doing, which is bottlenecking and blocking any progress. But look, you know, there are some great things that happened. Our endorsed candidates swept. Elizabeth Warren is going to be a terrific senator.
That was a great thing.
That was probably the single best thing I saw, actually.
Did you hear how much money was put into that campaign?
How much in the end?
$79 million. $79 million was put into Warren's campaign. Imagine that.
What?
Yeah.
You mean Scott Brown's people, the Scott Brown people?
Warren's campaign. What? That's how much the Democrats threw to Warren.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, that's
tremendous. She got tremendous support from all over the country.
She's an important figure. I think it's very important that she's going to be in the Senate. I think she can really, I hope, affect some change.
She got a lot of.
I agree with you. She's a no nonsense person. So I think you're absolutely right on that, Lila.
I was thrilled to see that she won. The other thing that pleased me actually was something I just read off the AFL-CIO blog site, and that is that a lot of the structure, the activist structure that's been put in place by the unions, will remain in place because there's so many important issues that are going to be brought up starting right away in the lame duck session. And the conservative Republicans are already mobilizing to try to polarize, you know, the Congress even further and hammer through their agenda with this kind of, what is this, this great compromise that they've gotten placed there.
Well, it's not, yeah, there's no compromise.
No.
It's where they, it's what if they don't pass something, all the cuts go into place. So in the next 2 months, so that's going to be quite frightening.
But they want cuts still to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid,
and no cuts to the wealthy.
And no cuts to the wealthy,
extend the Bush tax cuts.
Yeah.
That's right. So I was glad to see that structure of activism, the people are still in place and it's still going to continue.
It has to. I mean, that's the thing is I'm thrilled as I am with the overall outcome and as thrilled as our AFSCME union is. The fact is we've got to just turn around now and build on that same base because of the fact that these are the same people who tried to, and I'm talking about the corporations and the you know, extremist billionaires who tried to buy all of these seats in the election are going to be funding all kinds of anti-worker, anti-union initiatives such as the ones you just mentioned. So we've got to just be on our toes, can't let our guard down at all.
Oh, absolutely not. And Leo and I were watching C-SPAN, and they had several groups on.
That was this afternoon. They were showing. They had five major conservative pundits, on, and hey, these guys were constitutionalists and whatnot, you know. And they had Boswell and some other clowns. Oh my God, Larry. They were so ripped at Romney, all right? These guys said they will ensure and they'll keep pressure on all the GOP never to hire Karl Rove or Gillespie or anybody that was involved with this campaign again in any Republican election. And he called the Crossroads Fund, the Karl Rove's Crossroads Fund. He could, this major conservative. He called it a worthless fund. He called it worthless. It only made almost $1 billion, but he says that it was totally worthless to win this election. Yeah.
Well, what happened was the Republican Party is the party of looking, you know, we have a two-faced God. We have one party that looks backwards and one party looks forward. And the Republicans think that the world is still 1950.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's the kind of campaign they ran. We are not a country of white, rich men.
Even middle-class men, or even white poor men. But one more thing before I have to have Larry talk here. But the one more thing that surprised me on this poll result that they were talking about, the AFL-CIO poll, is there were still roughly 30% of the union members, all right,
voted for
Romney. You know? I know. How they do this, you know?
Yeah,
I've had frank conversations with many of our members about doing that being akin to voting for your executioner, as we discussed. Now, you know, the
what was their comeback though?
How do people respond to that?
I mean, look. in the end, what you're doing is you tend to be calling and phone banking and talking to people who are generally more union members who are more
receptive
to the message. Yeah, more receptive. You know, I'm always polite. I enjoy a discussion and an argument, but this one, the stakes were really frightening, more than any other election I can recall. So, you know, but the thing is, too, it would just be, it's awfully hard for me to respond to that. Not that I've seen the same thing. You know, I would like to see the breakouts, what they would call the crosstabs, I guess, and see which union members and what kinds. I mean, law enforcement folks tend to be conservative. And, you know, I was talking to a police officer in Newington who, quite frankly, I had a, you know, a very strange conversation with the guy because he was going on and on about immigration and, you know, why he voted for Romney. You know. There's quite a lot of diversity within the scope of our movement, but in the end, you know, if 30% voted for Romney, obviously, by a better than 2-to-1 margin, our members turned out and voted for Obama, voted for Chris Murphy.
Very pleased.
We were getting very positive response to phone calls, to workplace literature drops, things like that. So, you know, even anecdotally, we were starting to feel fairly positive about things. People understood that the stakes were terribly high.
Were you surprised at the polls? Not the polls, at the turnout? The voter turnout around the country?
Yeah, well, you know, again,
really.
I think that... Let's say that again.
I say you probably, maybe not, because you know the kind of effort that went into this, and the stakes were high. But
well,
I
can
say
in our town, I was talking to one of the people who's active in the Democratic Party, and she talked to me this morning, and she said when she checked to see who had voted, there were only two people that hadn't, whom she called. Both of them were two ill elderly people.
Oh.
All the registered Democrats voted.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's
right.
What she said.
Yeah.
And
how about the Republicans?
She's a Democrat, she said there were only two people who didn't vote, and that was because of illness. The turnout was amazing in our town. I mean, I've lived here a number of years, and I've never seen a turnout like I saw yesterday.
And you went.
Yeah, same here in my town in Farmington, and we actually got rid of a stodgy conservative Republican. He had served one term in the House, and we had a big upset here and elected our candidate Mike D'Amico to the Connecticut General Assembly. And turnout was terrific. So I'm glad. You know, democracy is supposed to be a participatory sport, and I think that part of the reason, at least again, I can only speak for the fact that our members turned out in higher percentages than the general public. I think people were really alarmed at all of the money. Yeah, all of the ads, the negative campaigning. I think so too.
I think that Murphy, I
he came in
that
strong
up.
In the end there. I thought he did a good
job.
Well,
I think it was because Linda, when she, I mean, I was getting really sick of her, and most of the state was, but I couldn't stand getting any more stuff in the mail from Linda, and I couldn't stand it. And what bothered me the most of all of her ads was when she came out with these people that were independents. They're voting for Obama, but they're going to vote for Linda. Did you see that ad?
Oh my gosh, I sure did. And I said
that,
you know,
that hurt. That one just went, oh God, you know what I mean? And even the Republicans.
I was surprised by it. It just showed that she was getting desperate.
Desperation is what I thought.
Yeah, and I think that commercial was a function of getting, you know, some internal poll numbers back that showed she just wasn't doing
well, and
that she wasn't going to be able to buy this thing.
I think the best thing that happened is that Chris Murphy fought back. I mean, it took him a long time, but he did in the debates finally speak up for himself, and I think he did a rather good job. And Linda
ran a good campaign.
Yeah, Linda McMahon, like Mitt Romney, all they have are topic sentences. They wouldn't know how to develop a report, let me tell you.
Nope.
They're great at saying catchphrases, but they never develop anything. So you never really, at the end of a long discussion that they have, you still don't know where they stand or how they're going to do anything.
And I think that, you know, and you bring up a great point, because I just think that folks like Romney and McMahon, who are just, you know, impossibly wealthy, they have no clue what it's like to have to pay bills, to be in debt, to be in the middle class. And people really picked up on that. I honestly think that. I mean, I think that they did a lot of damage to themselves, because people really came to realize that, hey, they really aren't on our side. They really don't understand and have no empathy for what it means to be part of that struggling middle class. And I think they really turned people off.
I think so, because I think that Romney, to me, came across as arrogant and detached and cool. I couldn't believe when he said to the guy who was the moderator that he was going to discontinue funding of public radio.
Yeah, that was so arrogant.
I mean, I couldn't believe he had said it, and it was really, in a way, a very unkind statement to make on television to someone who's a moderator working for them.
Right. I'm gonna put your company out of business. And, you know, and that is that, but that's the Bain capital. That's the vulture capitalism.
Absolutely
model.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We take
Absolutely
over
right.
companies, drive them into bankruptcy, put people out of work, and make tons of money on the misery of those folks. And
well, you know,
That said it all to me when I saw it.
Yeah.
I thought, oh,
see,
my God.
I thought that was, you're so right. See, that was like a key moment for me, because everybody was
me
so
too.
Worked up about how poorly Obama did. And he did do poorly in that debate. But that PBS remark was, you know, it was a gift.
That was so over the top.
I was just horrified that anybody would say anything like that.
I'm going to fire Big Bird, and by the way, I'm going to fire you.
And I'm going to, you know, I like you, but you know, I'm not going to give you any funding. We're billions of dollars
in debt. I'm not going to raise taxes on those who can afford to pay a little bit more. I'm going to cut the measly budget of PBS. You know,
What do they got? What do they got? Maybe $5 or $10 million a year from the government. I don't know what they, but it's not enough.
You know, another thing that I heard from people.
For a moment, I know I'm thrilled at the election results, but I did want to talk a little bit about. Hurricane Sandy, and I wondered if you've had much feedback from union members on how they're all doing.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, we didn't get hit with quite the same ferocity that people in New York and New Jersey.
Oh, isn't that horrible?
But I did spend. A good part of the week last week, that was down in East Lyme. I'm going to have a story up on our website soon about East Lyme, where the town really got devastated. 99% of the people were without power, homes destroyed. And so people are, this is a nightmare. You know, timing is everything, and I think it sort of brought into sharp relief the need for government and the need to have government agencies responding and ready to go and ready to help people in a time of need. And look, things are still going very slowly, to answer your question, and there's still people without power. You know, it's going to take months and months and months to fix these cities and towns on the up and down the coast. So
You know what I thought was I don't really care for this guy very much, Bloomberg, but I'll tell you, I couldn't understand why he allowed the marathon to keep going, and then all of a sudden, you know, and not shut it down like right away, you know?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was, you know, the,
that was a big misstep, but you got to admit that he retracted it.
Yeah, but
it was poor leadership. I mean, you're going to let a bunch of sort of, you know, effete running people, you're going to have them throwing their water bottles on the ground when there are people who don't have water. You know,
And there was this amazing number of generators that were being going to be used for that. And, there's a comment of the guy, I don't know whether he was a firefighter or a policeman or what he was. He said, the guy that said, you know, we're pulling bodies out of the water, and he's talking about running a race.
There's a major disconnect here, he says.
That was poor leadership. And, you know, and look, I'm not a big Bloomberg fan because of the fact that, you know, he dumped $1 million into Rohrabach's campaign in the 5th District during the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
You're kidding.
I wondered why
Times was running positive articles on Rohrabach, too.
Oh, that's one of the things I am absolutely thrilled about, that he didn't make it.
No, I'm thrilled, too. I'm so glad Elizabeth Estes, a good person. She'll be a perfectly fine congresswoman. But they, the Bloomberg dumped a ton of money into the Rohrabach campaign to pay for those feel-good ads that were flooding the airwaves. And, you know, another thing...
Why would he do that? I thought he was a Democrat.
He's independent.
Well, he's an independent, but he's really got more... He's more Republican-leaning.
Way more.
You know, let me say this, too, about Sandy before we get off, you know, because I'm thinking about Rohrabach, but more about Linda McMahon. The fact that the Republicans in particular were flooding the airwaves with ads in Connecticut during Sandy, as well as other states, that was very, let me put it this way, that was very off-putting to a lot of voters, whether they were affected directly by the storm or not. It was just a poor taste for Linda McMahon to be saturating every bit of the commercial airtime during those 2 days when the storm was pounding all of our states up and down the eastern seaboard. But, you know, her ads were flooding the Connecticut airwaves, and people thought that was in bad taste.
Well, you know, she probably wasn't experiencing the deprivation that all the rest of us experience.
That's
what it shows. I mean, that's a disconnect. I felt that she would have served herself better by taking that money and donating it to the people who were suffering instead of running those ads.
Yeah, you know what
would have gotten ahead of the game.
You know what would have made such a big difference for Romney? Rather than collecting canned goods in his stump speeches there after the storm, if he would have written a check to New Jersey or something for $1 million or $5 million. You know what I mean? That would have made a significant.
He's for other people.
As a charity, you know what I mean? As a guy who say, "Hey, look, I got a lot of money," you know. But that would have tipped the scale. But I saw
you this too. And look, the Republicans showed their true colors because they really don't. You know, as a party right now, they just don't care about people. And the fact that they had so little to say or do during Sandy, look, they were paralyzed when Katrina hit. They were trying. They turned a blind eye when people in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast were suffering. Romney, like you said, you know, Romney could have even quietly dipped into that vast fortune and mobilized other billionaires who were funding all of these ads against Democrats. And instead, they just went into radio silence. They said they did and said nothing for 4 days. And certainly, yes, that helped Obama, no doubt about it. But I think more to the point, it just as Lila said, it just reaffirmed the disconnect. You know, that they had
terrible.
No idea what to do when people are suffering because the one agency, you know, the one tool they need is government.
That's right.
And when you run a campaign on destroying government and handing everything over to the private sector, which Romney said, the more, you know, when asked about FEMA, get rid of it, put more control in the hands of the states, and then put even more control into the hands of the private sector, that's how you get things fixed. And you know, Sandy just turned all of that on its head and forced them into that radio silence, which hurt them.
Yeah. I thought that our governor did a good job during this crisis.
He was. He was on top of it.
I thought he did a fine job. I was very pleased with his response.
Yeah,
and how he,
when reporters were asking dumb questions, like he kind of like would get a little bit impatient, which I sort of enjoyed watching. we were fortunate, and I think that we didn't get hit as hard as we could have, although again the shoreline communities are in rough shape, and
yeah,
you know, most of the towns are going to be declared ineligible for federal emergency assistance. But yeah, I think he showed leadership. You're right.
I was pleased by how he reacted to it.
I want to just change the subject for a second, because I heard one of the most disturbing things that I've heard in a long time, this is the second or third time I've heard about it, is that there's rumor that Obama is planning to put John Kerry somewhere in his cabinet, possibly Secretary of State, because Clinton plans to
resign.
So what is your take on that? Because I personally, as a politician and even as a human being, I can't stand John Kerry. But you know, what's
how do you really feel?
What's your take on that? And how do you feel, I
certainly didn't all I know of John Kerry is what I saw in 2004, and he just ran a horrendous campaign.
Terrible.
Eminently beatable. Kerry does have a flair, that's the wrong word, but you know, he has an aptitude for those issues. You know, he might very well be a good and qualified Secretary of State. I think Clinton has done a decent job under difficult circumstances. And
she got really wrung out. She just, it looks like it took every ounce of energy that she had. And
she really has served this country nobly, I think. And being Secretary of State in this day and age, with all the problems in the Middle East, with Russia, with the North Korea, everything is, you know, everything is a tinderbox. So to answer your question, does that underwhelm me a little bit? Sure, but let's learn a little bit more about his bona fides when it comes to foreign policy, and maybe he's got a way of, this guy probably was born to be a diplomat more than a baller.
He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth,
no doubt about it. And his
actual name was Kern, and he changed it to Kerry in order to run it for politics in Massachusetts.
Yeah, we'll see. But you know, that's rumor at this point. I don't know that that's actually been confirmed. We'll start hearing about all these.
That's rumor. That was real. I learned that in the 2004 campaign.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about whether he's going to be nominated to.
I meant he went from Kern to Kerry in order to run in the Irish area there in Boston, you know.
Yeah.
But
well,
sometimes
we'll see,
they
but
bring
he
up.
He is a Boston Brahmin, so.
They bring up someone's name, and then that person isn't even considered. You just never know. They'll bring up like three or four people. I'm
right.
sure he's not the only one, and there'll be a couple other names coming up, I'm sure.
But he's been a big help.
A lot of work to be done, no doubt about it.
Done a lot of groundwork.
Yeah, I don't envy Obama his next 4 years. He's got a tough road ahead of him.
Hey, do you think there'll be a new? There'll be any resignations in the Supreme Court?
Boy, I was talking about that with my daughter, and you know, I'm thinking that the I don't think it's going to tilt quite the way we want it to tilt, because the oldest is Stevens, so that'll be, you know, that'll be sort of a kind of a trade. You'll end up with a moderate for a moderate. Ginsburg isn't healthy. You know, Obama will get that appointment, but you know, the key is, you know, you've got that group of five. I mean, apart from the health care, the Obamacare decision, you know, it's been that group of five: Roberts, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, and I'm missing the other, the fifth conservative vote. So, you know, those guys are relatively young. So I think we, you know, we'll have to see.
Were you surprised? Were you surprised that at Roberts' vote on Obamacare?
Say that again.
Were you surprised at Roberts' vote on Obamacare?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I was floored, and it gave me some hope. The fact that there was some kind of a
well, maybe he realized that dismantling it would be
I
don't know what was written up. I don't know how that decision was written up. What he said. Be interesting to read that.
It would, but you know, I mean, I think the entire nation was floored.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think it was the right decision. I mean, you can't just
absolutely
handle.
Absolutely.
That would be a nightmare.
Now we can get about. You know, now we got to go about fixing that rather than starting from scratch. And
So where do? How did they? Were there any workers' rights or any referendums or anything that came out of this election?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. Two of the biggest were, the single biggest was California had a Proposition 32, which just goes right back to what we were talking about the extremist billionaires and corporations. That was actually a referendum to prevent unions from being able to spend members' dues money on political action. No limits, of course, on corporations. The biggest funder was this industrialist, Charles Munger, who donated something like, you know, $25 million of his own fortune. So this was a bunch of right-wing, wealthy kooks who got this proposition, who got this ballot referendum, on the ballot, and it was soundly defeated in California. So that was great news. Michigan also, there was a significant accomplishment. There was an initiative to it's called emergency managers, to allow chief elected officials to put you know, these managers in place if you're in bankruptcy, and abrogate collective bargaining agreements, which is why they do it, and that was defeated. So some good things happened.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a good election overall, especially for working people.
Did you, one of the biggest referendums that was in California was the Proposition 37.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that? The one for labeling GMO foods?
No, I was, I heard some people talking about it.
Yeah, well, it turns out it was defeated. It really was aggravating that it happened, but there was so much money against that. I mean, all your major corporations from Kellogg's.
That's the genetic.
Yeah, genetically modified foods.
Right,
they wanted to have it labeled, you know, to require labeling. Right now, there's no requirement for any food to be labeled GMO.
Agribusiness won on that one.
Yeah,
and you know that the problem with this is that the United States has the highest cancer rate in the world. All right, 400 times higher than any other country in the world. Right, and the reason that they do is because of their diet, and the reason is because the United States allows a genetically modified food to be unlabeled and pervasive throughout the entire food chain, all right, food supply. Whereas the European countries have kicked Monsanto and these genetically modified foods out of their country, all right, and bans on them, all right, and India has just kicked them out. Hungary was the last one.
Even India has done it, huh?
Yeah,
because it's destroying their agriculture, all right, with their with their seeds.
Their seeds.
And stuff. And it's just a diabolical nightmare.
Now, which staple has been declared a pesticide?
Corn.
Corn has been declared.
Corn. If you look up corn, okay. If you look up pesticides, known pesticides, actually corn is listed as a pesticide today because of the Roundup, because of Monsanto having genetically engineered the corn, their corn, to produce a pesticide. All right, to make it free of certain pesticides. Certain insects, and it's been so overly modified now that it's actually listed as a pesticide.
So that's pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
I hope that we can fight some of those corporations in order to provide people with a more healthy diet.
Yeah, we tried to do these articles on our Tuesday night show and do about half an hour of health articles.
But we were particularly hoping that proposition would pass in California,
but it's a real uphill battle.
The money they bring to bear is unbeatable, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Also, two states just legalized marijuana. They legalized it.
I know, Oregon,
Colorado, and Washington. And
Washington.
It wasn't medical. It was for recreational use.
Consumption.
Right.
I'm all for it because the more we legalize it, the more we take it above ground and start solving some of these problems.
Why not get the tax on it?
Well, what they're doing there is the reason it passed is because it's going in like alcohol and cigarettes and whatnot. They're going to industrialize it
and
the manufacturing of it and have it sold with and taxed and regulated
like any other recreational thing,
beer or wine, liquor.
Hey, listen, guys, I got to get going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very encouraging news, you know.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled. The timing couldn't be better. We did well yesterday, and now, like you said, we've got to hold our feet to the fire.
Yeah.
That's right. And I know you'll do that, Larry.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good night. Good talking with you guys. Take care, Leah, Lila. Have a good night.
Good night.
That was Larry Dorman from the Aspen
Union Public Affairs Coordinator talking to us about his perception of what happened on election night and other thoughts.
Yeah, it was great to talk to him.
Yeah, he sounded tired. I'm sure that
it was a long day.
Well, it was a long road to Tuesday because he's very active, doing all kinds of things, meeting with people, talking to people.
But I was going to mention that Proposition 37 again, and it's terrible that it's dead.
Well, it might come up. I'm sure it'll come up again. I mean, at least they got it on the ballot.
Oh, they got it on the ballot, yeah. But I'm just very surprised that they defeated it.
Well, think of all those companies that are behind GMOs.
Oh, I know, but you know, people would want to
support that.
Support that, you know. I just thought that. You know,
I think a lot of people don't know that much about it, to tell you the truth.
Well, it was close, actually, because the results were 4,133,000 people voted no, but 3,566,000 people voted yes.
It'll probably pass the next time.
Yeah, I was really surprised.
As people get more educated about it.
Yeah, and it said Proposition 37, a mandatory labeling of genetically engineered food initiative, was on the November 6, 2012 ballot in California as an initiated state statute, where it was defeated. If Proposition 37 had been approved, it would have required labeling on raw or processed food offered for sale to plants to consumers if the food is made from plants or animals with genetic material changed in specified ways. Prohibited labeling or advertising such food as natural.
Yeah.
Okay. And exempted from this requirement foods that are certified organic, unintentionally produced with genetically engineered material, made from animal fed or injected with genetically engineered material, but not genetically engineered themselves, processed with or containing only small amounts of genetically engineered ingredients, administered for treatments of medical conditions, sold for immediate consumption, such as in a restaurant or alcoholic beverages. James Wheaton, who filed the ballot language for the initiative, called it the California Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food. And I know James Wheaton because he's a Facebook friend of mine. He's an immigration attorney, but he is retired. And California. And it says these results are from the California Secretary of State. Okay, but it's fascinating thing just to note that it goes on and it shows the bill and it shows the opponents. And you look at the opponents. Oh my God! You know, Monsanto. Monsanto gave $8 million
to fight this.
DuPont gave $5.4 million. PepsiCo, $2 million. Grocery Manufacturers Association, $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Dow AgriSciences, $2 million. Bayer Crop Science, $2 million. BASF Plant Science, $2 million. My God, the million dollars. Coca-Cola gave $1.7 million. Kraft Foods Global gave $1.95 million.
Wow.
Syngenta Corporation gave $2 million. ConAgra Foods.
Well, what's the total? Does it give a total of how much?
Yeah, it's $8 million. 8.1. No, that's not something.
No, what's the total of all of it? Doesn't say? Yeah.
That's
right
yeah,
to the end of our
over
show.
$20 million, way over $20 million.
Wow.
To the to
well, that's something that we
oh,
can.
Oh, here. Total campaign cash, $45 million in opposition, and support was $8 million, 8.7 million.
Well, we're right to the end of our show, Leo.
Okay. So
and
we want to thank
us, thank you, folks,
and all the workers, well, the work of those union people that were out plugging away for.
They made a lot of calls. I mean, I got you know, two or three calls, so I'm sure other people did too.
And I want to thank Larry for all his work, for being on the show tonight. And we just want to say we appreciate the unions, and keep it going, guys. You know, we'll be here to help you as much as we can.
All right.
So good night, everybody.
And
stay tuned. We've got a great show coming up tomorrow.
Have a good night, and we all to talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good night, folks.